which is on it, and your mobile. Come on, you come on, you can.接下来，我去吧。因为起码买这个，当然这个是啥？那个高了高的，用我们去过的。那用我们那的用我们的，那嘛这个生活的生活用我们就是马上完结。嗯，生生生活的呢，这个啊，让你做了生活的些了。那你旁边不带用这个，那是生活的些的，那你已经。 那总共是肯定，很奇怪嘛，就学了。现在人家学的，人家年龄啊，这些，人家这个，哎，就学会，学会了。那现在人家这个，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年龄，这个年
I'm not on. Am I here? Yes. So, good evening to everyone. Last time we were looking at the faults that come from engaging or staying under the influence of the afflicted mind. So these afflictions cause us, are the cause of all the problems and difficulties that we experience in this life, and that we are still to experience in this life as well as in our future lives. So it's these afflictive minds that keep us trapped within this prison of samsara. So to overcome this, last week we spoke about the need to guard our mind, and secondly, we also need to accumulate virtue. So we need to do these two things, guard our mind against the afflictions and accumulate virtue. And the text gave an analogy in terms of how we should guard our mind, because usually the text present that we should guard our mind against the arisal of the afflictions, even at the cost of our life. But last time the text also mentioned that we should guard our mind in the same way as a mother always takes care of her child. So in the same way that a mother, no matter what she is doing, is aware of what her child is doing, we too should always be aware of our mind. Then in terms of our daily meditation, we spoke last time how in our daily meditation we should always come to the conclusion that today, whatever activity I engage in, verbal or physical activity, it will not bring any harm to others. And this mind, this conclusion, should be we should come to such a conclusion on the basis of the generation of the mind of bodhicitta. And accompanying this, we should also have the intention that today, whenever I have the opportunity to be of benefit to others, I'll be of benefit to others. Whether it's in a situation where I can make a lasting difference to others, or even just something small, I will take that opportunity and I'll be of benefit to others. So this motivation of bodhicitta, this is something that we should generate on a daily basis. And doing so repeatedly over a sustained period, then we'll see change come to us. The text also used the analogy of us being like a prisoner bound within an iron-walled prison, and a prison that from which escape is impossible. So this is the situation we find ourselves in. We don't actually have any freedom. We're not free to do what we want, go where we want. And that is because we remain bound within cyclic existence. And so this cyclic existence is actually our experience, because being bound by these afflictive minds is this experience of cyclic existence. So we have the wish to be free, we have the wish to attain lasting happiness and freedom. And the reason we haven't attained liberation or freedom is because we remain trapped by these afflicted minds. So it's these afflictive minds that have created this prison of samsara and are preventing us from experiencing the lasting happiness of liberation. In the same way, a prisoner can break out of our prison, we too can do the same. So our prison, whilst being described as being this ironclad walls of samsara, our prison really is our own afflictive minds. And if we can break free of these afflictive minds, we too can become free of this prison of samsara, our own prison of samsara. So therefore, looking at this analogy, we can see that freedom is possible. And freedom comes from eliminating our very afflicted minds, our own minds that are afflicted. What are we going to then look at tonight? So we continue with this presentation focusing on the afflictions. So we'll look at how these afflicted minds arise and what results come from these destructive emotions once they have arisen. And once they have arisen, how can we actually eliminate them? What can we do about the situation? So that's what we're going to look at. That's the 24th verse. Of he whose fickle senses are controlled, these six that never cease to dart at things, and he who's fought and conquered many foes, the first is truly brave, the wise have said.
Two engages.
If we then, so tonight we're going to be looking at these three sections. Firstly, how the afflictions arise, then secondly, the results when they've arisen, and thirdly then, how to eliminate the afflicted minds. So firstly then, how the afflictions arise. So if we investigate our mind, we'll come to see that there's first a meeting of an object, and then a sense power. And from the sense power, then conceptual consciousnesses arise. So we have these six sense powers, and they have their own respective object. So the object of the eye sense power will be an object that it will be seen. There's object of the ear sense power, will be an object that is heard, etc. So they are the six relating to sight, sound, taste, smell, touch, and mental. So those are the six. So we have an object and we have a sense power. And once these two have come together, then there's the conceptual consciousness. So this conceptual consciousness then will start out with a mind of superimpose qualities or exaggeration onto the object. And then the conceptual consciousnesses will go in a particular direction. So the stages are threefold. There's the object, there's the sense power, and then this is followed by a variety of consciousnesses. To look at it in a little more detail, so if we take an object of sight, so you'll have there's an object that is to be seen, but for it to be perceived, for it to be seen, the perceiver requires a sense power. So you need a sense power, sense faculty, as well as the object to be perceived. And then when these two come into contact, in other words, you see something, then a variety of minds get involved. So for example, there will be an exaggeration on the qualities of this perceived object, and attachment now arises for the object. So now we have a variety of mental consciousnesses involved, including the afflicted mind of attachment. So now there's attachment for this desirable object that has been seen, and from the arisal of this mind, one then engages in activities. So one wants to get this object, and one therefore engages in a variety of activities to get that object. So one may even engage, of course, in non-virtuous activities, such as deceptive activities, to try and get this object of one's desire. And doing so, one accumulates karma. This karma is now accumulated, and later it's going to ripen. And because this karma has come from attachment and negative behavior, then it will result in suffering. So this is the stream that one engages in. We use the example of attachment because we have the most familiarity with it, but it's the same with anger. So with anger, there's an object that is perceived by a sense power. So let's say it's something we see. And then this is something unwanted, something undesirable, something unpleasant. And now we have a mind of anger or a mind of annoyance or frustration arising. And then from this conceptual consciousness, we then engage in activities. So there could be verbal activities or physical activities. And we accumulate karma, which later will ripen in suffering. So all of this, so this end result of suffering. This comes about because of this arousal of one afflicted mind, whether attachment or anger, and that then leads to their various activities and the accumulation of karma.
For a mind to
engage an object, this object needs to be perceived. So we'll just stay with the illustration of eye sense power, because this is easiest to understand, but it's the same for all of them. So if one is going to mentally engage with an object through the eye sense power, one needs to see the object. So if we take something that one may feel desire for, so say a beautiful car, one needs to see the beautiful car in order to end up thinking about this car and thinking of it as being beautiful. So one requires the object to be perceived, the sense power that perceives it, and then from this come the various minds. So these minds, for example, could be minds of attachment. So we've seen the object and I go, oh, I'd love to have a car like this, and we then have a mind of attachment. Or it's our own car and we think, wow, aren't I someone special because this fantastic car is mine, and that says things about me. And then the mind of pride comes. Or a mind of other minds can come, for example, well, that person only has that car. What does that say about that person? And then you look down on the person. And likewise, anger, etc., all these variety of afflictive minds come in a similar way. There's an object, and it's perceived by a sense power, and then from this come all the variety of conceptual minds. We've spoken a bit about an object that one sees, but one that, the objects are perceived in through all our sense faculties. So, for example, if we hear sound, so this then is heard by our ear sense power. And if that sound then is a pleasant sound, some say something beautiful, whether it's a story we're enjoying or some lovely music or a pleasant speech, maybe someone praising us or complimenting us, then from something like that, we then give rise to conceptual consciousnesses, such as attachment. Or if the sound is different, maybe it's a particularly annoying sound or unpleasant music we dislike, or someone speaking to us in an unpleasant way, they're criticizing us, they're scorning us, they're blaming us for something, then other conceptual consciousnesses arise, such as anger, such as annoyance. So these conceptual consciousnesses then also arise in dependence on the sound and the sense power. So this process is exactly the same, but in this case, it's to do with sound as opposed to previously to do with sight. And similarly then for if the object is an object of smell, then this object is perceived by our nose sense power, and then the object and the sense power come together, and thirdly, the variety of conceptual consciousnesses will come about. So these conceptual consciousnesses again can be, oh, that's a delicious smell, and then a variety of other thoughts will follow. Or it can be a thought of, that's not such a pleasant smell, and then a variety of other minds will follow. Or if it's something that, for example, we've cooked and it's smelling absolutely delicious, then pride can arise. Oh, I really am once again I'm making a delicious meal. I'm a fantastic chef, better than everyone else. So all these conceptual consciousnesses again come about following the meeting of the object and the sense power. So we've spoken then about sight, we've spoken about sound, and we've spoken about smell. And then, so let's talk about taste and a taste and touch. So yeah, the process is exactly the same. You have an object, and then one comes into contact, for example, with one's tongue sense power, and then one experiences a taste, and there's a variety of then conceptual consciousnesses follow. So it can be a delicious taste, and attachment can arise. Or the taste can be something awful, and then repulsion arises, and so this could fall into the class of anger, or if we could get angry for the person who cooked the food, and or if we made it ourselves, of course, pride can come and the like. And the same with touch. So we touch something, and it's either unpleasant, maybe it's too hot, or it's something very pleasant and soft and appealing. And then from the meeting of the object with the physical sense power, and then the conceptual consciousnesses follow. So the process is the same for all of these sense powers. Then the sixth one is related to mental objects. So here, let's say one's sitting alone in one's room, but of course you can be with others too, but let's say you're sitting alone, and then you're starting to think, and you're starting to think about something or someone or an event, and so you have your object, And this is what you're recalling. So you're thinking, oh, he said this to me, and that, well, I can't believe he said this. It was so hurtful, so rude. So we have an object, we have our mind engaged, and the afflictions follow. And the afflictions will be, in this case, it's probably going to be anger. I can't believe that he said these things to me, and we're getting all annoyed and worked up about it. Or, of course, in a different scenario, attachment can arise. Or we can be thinking about an object that we've enjoyed and we'd like to have again, or something that we haven't had but we really want. And here again, attachment arises. And this is an object we are not right now seeing or hearing or tasting, but this is the whole process is mental. And it ends up again with the afflictive minds being involved and the karma being accumulated. So these then can be called the six doors for the arisal of the afflictions. So just to list them quickly again, we'll have the door of the eyes, the eye sense powers, of the ear, of the nose, or the smell rather, taste, touch, and mental. And if one has never heard something, or maybe doesn't even have ear sense powers, then one's not going to have any attachment for those objects, such as beautiful music, if you've never heard it, or attachment for being praised, or the aversion or dislike or anger for being criticized and ridiculed, if one has never come into contact with these objects. So then one may think, well, we hear now that it's through these six doors that we give rise to all these afflictive minds, and we hear that if we didn't have these six doors, we wouldn't meet the objects, and therefore the afflictive minds wouldn't arise. So maybe it would be better not to have them. Whilst it's certainly true that it's through these six doors that the afflicted minds arise, it's not only that through through our six doors afflicted minds arise. Through these six doors, we also can accumulate virtue, and we can experience worldly happiness. So to make an analogy, a car, if one has a car, this is of course something that can lead to serious injury and death. However, it can also lead to one being able to engage in a variety of tasks and have some freedom to go here and there, and also to help others, to be of benefit to others. It all depends on the skill of the driver. So in the same way, how we utilize these six doors lead either to the actions due to afflicted minds, or can lead to experience of worldly happiness, or the accumulation of virtue.
Mm-hmm.
So what does, so as we've just seen with the analogy of a car, it's a car can be something that's particularly harmful or of benefit. And that comes down to the skill of the driver. So similarly, all the variety of objects that we encounter, they themselves aren't necessarily causes of harm or benefit. Similarly with the sense power, it really all comes down to the minds that follow, and therefore the skill of the individual. So, for example, if one encounters an object, let's just say one sees something, and one sees something, and one thinks, there's the object, the eye sense power is involved, and then the mental consciousnesses follow. So if those mental consciousnesses are relating to the object in accordance with how it exists in reality, then no fault is going to follow, no harm is going to come from encountering this object. However, if that same object is perceived, and here there is an exaggeration placed onto that object, so now the object is not being engaged in accordance with reality, but there is this exaggeration of its qualities, then attachment arises, and then the stream of negativity follows. So the fault isn't with the object or with the sense power. Where we need to look at is what happens after that with all these, with the consciousnesses. Likewise with an object from which anger can potentially arise. The problem isn't to do with the object or the sense power in between, but it's rather to do with the way of thinking. So here the way of thinking, if it's in accordance with reality, then anger certainly isn't going to arise, or any other afflictive mind. However, if there's an exaggeration placed onto the faults of the object, then anger is going to arise. And from the anger, of course, the other faults will follow. Is
it
so? So here, the where the fault comes is where there's an exaggeration that goes beyond what exists in reality. So this is what leads to the resulting afflictions. Then it's helpful, Kosovo.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've looked now at what for us is senses are controlled. So in our translation, that's what we've looked at. So now to look, that's the first line in the Tibetan, and the second line, which is for us, of he who's fickle mind, and then goes on, never ceases to dart at things. So this, what is the second line in Tibetan, there's a lot that can be said on this. So, and it can be said, explained in a number of different ways. But here what is being described is a mind that isn't stable, a mind that is going all over the place. So that's what we have here as a mind that never ceases, a mind that is fickle. So the never ceasing, this is a mind that is not stable, that's moving. And similarly with the words fickle and to dart. So this then is minds that that don't stay stably, but are distracted and move between objects. What we've heard then thus far is that all so it's through these six doors and counting objects through the six doors that the afflictive minds arise. And once these afflictive minds have arisen, then negative karma is accumulated. And it's from this then, so either whether it's mental karma, physical karma, verbal karma, this then ripens in all the problems and difficulties that we experience. So this is, this we've now spoken in detail about the stream of how we accumulate the causes for future suffering, and it gives us understanding in terms of all the problems and difficulties that we're experiencing in our life right now, how these problems came about. So here, in terms of these afflictive minds, the more dominant, the stronger they are, the more frequent they arise, then the more problems we will encounter and experience.
So
The second line here in this verse, and then can be, like I said, can be described in many ways. And how it probably is usually described is talking about the mind not being stable, being drawn to the objects of attachment and anger and the like. And so we've already looked at that when we were looking at the role of the sense powers. So I'm going to now explain these words that we have here as never ceasing and to darting at things in a mind that is fickle. I'm going to explain it in a different way. So here, when we come to understand that from the afflictive mind only harm comes, and that the stronger the afflictive mind, and or the more afflictive minds that we have, the stronger the stronger the problems come, the more frequent the problems come that we experience. So when we've understood this very clearly, then what we need to do is move our mind away from a non-virtue, move our mind away towards virtue. So that's a different way to understand this verse. So the teaching that I want to get across to you is, firstly, you need to see how the arisal of how karma comes about, and that is through those three points we spoke about: the object and the sense power, and then the resulting conceptual consciousnesses, which could include afflictions. And then, when we have understood that, and we have also understood what we've spoken about in the past, that from the afflictions only suffering comes. When that too is understood, then we should move our mind towards virtue. And that means guarding our mind, ensuring that we don't let the afflictions arise, and if we see them potentially coming, we rather take our mind towards the side of virtue. So here the habit that we are trying to form is a mind that starts to naturally go in a virtuous direction, naturally go in a direction away from the causes of the accumulation of non-virtue and suffering, but towards minds of peace, minds of virtue, minds of happiness. And if we accumulate, or if we create this habit, then our mind will naturally be going in a positive direction, or a non-afflictive direction. And the familiarity we have with afflictions, or a negative side, this familiarity will weaken. And then in this way, our afflictions themselves will weaken, our virtuous minds, these will grow. We will, another way to put it is, we will become more positive people, and our negative sides, these will weaken. And as this positive side, or this virtuous side, grows and strengthens, then we will also be approaching the attainment of the state of liberation, the state that is completely free of all forms of suffering and difficulty.
这个制作完了。
When we think of, or when we hear the word enemy, then usually we will think of someone who harms us. So we'll think of someone who we don't get on with, someone that we argue with, someone that we don't like very much, or someone who prevents us from doing what we want to do. So that's the kind of person we generally would think of as an enemy. And when we think of defeating an enemy, we think of defeating them or changing that situation so that they no longer stopped us from getting what we wanted, or they stopped abusing us or mistreating us or speaking to us badly. And if we managed to change the situation in that way, we would have defeated that enemy. And we would not then be free of these problems and difficulties. So that's generally the way that we think. But as we heard last time, the real enemy from the perspective of the Buddha Dharma is not an external person or situation. It's rather the internal response to that. In other words, it's rather the afflicts of mind that arise in relation to what is happening externally. So that is the real enemy. So it's not, for example, the harsh words or the scorn or the belittling that comes from the other person that is the enemy. That's not actually what causes us harm. Rather, we have the object, we have the sense power, and then we have the mental consciousnesses. And it's within those mental consciousnesses that the real enemy is found. And that would usually be the arisal of pride towards what has been said, the arisal of anger towards what has been said, maybe resentment or spite, an array of harmful minds. These are the real enemy. And as we heard last time, the reason that we as Buddhas call these minds the real enemy and not the person who's abusing us or beating us or talking to us in an inappropriate manner, the reason we call these minds the enemy is because it's these minds that are causing us suffering right now, and it's these minds that are leading to the accumulation of negative karma that will lead to further suffering in the future. And it's when we react under the influence of these minds that we will harm others around us right now. So therefore, it's these minds that arise in response to external events that are the real enemy. And this in the Buddha Dharma is what is actually meant by enemy. So therefore, if we want to overcome these enemies, the response is very different. Because again, when we think about enemies in a worldly sense, we'll think about warfare, there'll be an enemy nation. Or we think about the situation with terrorism, and we would label a terrorist as an enemy. And we think about the harm that this person that these people would do to us. Or maybe, as the example already given, an opponent in society, maybe a competitor at work or someone who stops us getting what we want or doing what we want. These are the people we generally refer to as enemies. And the person who overcomes them, who defeats them, this is what is called a hero. So that is the general way of thinking in the world. If we think of the defeat of terrorism or the defeat of an external enemy, that person is called a hero and society applauds them. But here in our context, we should come to see our true enemies as our own afflicted minds, these destructive emotions. And the behavior of a hero is the person, is the attitude of striving to overcome these inner enemies. And how do we overcome these enemies, inner enemies? That is through the cultivation of their contrary minds. So our weapons here are the minds such as love, minds such as compassion, minds such as wisdom. Because, for example, if we cultivate love or compassion or wisdom, then the actual enemy of, for example, anger will not be able to arise. Or if it arises, it will be in a very weak form. And as we develop our familiarity with these weapons of love and compassion and patience, then these enemies that our minds, such as anger and aversion and spite, these weaken. So this is how ourselves as bodhisattva wearers needs to engage with our actual enemies, these afflictive minds. To defeat these afflictive minds, we need to strengthen our virtuous minds, our positive minds, and slowly through this approach, we will be able to overcome our actual enemies, our true enemies. Let's then look at the third and fourth lines of verse 24. And he who's fought and conquered many foes, the first is truly brave, the wise have said. So as we've just heard that generally in the world, then enemies are external to oneself. And then those who overcome these enemies would be considered heroes or brave. And so we can think of many situations, such as if a country is at war and the country wins, then their army and their military leaders would be called heroes and they would be called brave. Or likewise, the police or counter-terrorism specialists who overcome the threat posed by terrorists, they are called heroes and they are called brave. So that's generally how we speak in the world. But in terms of our Buddhist context, this is not the activity of someone who's hero, someone who's a hero, or someone who's truly brave. Rather, the wise see the enemy as something very different, and therefore they see the brave as something very different. So first of all, what is meant by this term wise? So whenever we hear in the Buddhist context about someone who is wise, this generally means someone who understands what the actual enemies are, in other words, the afflictive minds. And moreover, they understand how to overcome the afflictive minds, and they understand how to accumulate virtue and progress towards the state of liberation and enlightenment. So such a person who has that knowledge and is engaged in that practice, such a person is called someone who is wise. And therefore, such a person is whom such a person will consider to be an actual hero or someone truly brave is not going to be a military hero, but rather someone who counters our true enemies, these inner enemies. So such a person who's standing up and striving to overcome the inner enemies of the afflictions, that person is considered a hero by the wise.
And တွေ့ရင်းပါဝင်တယ်မင်းပါလို့ပေါ်တယ်ကွာဆန္ဒကွာဒါသာဒီနေ့ဒီတောင်းတူမိကြီးထုံးလို့ချေဖာချိုလည်းမိကြီးထုံးဖာချိုလည်းသူ့ထုံးတယ်ဒီထုံးတယ်မိကြီးထုံးရထုံးတယ်ဒါနဲ့ဖာချိုလည်းတောင်းတူမျိုးငါပဲတောင်းရသေးတယ်ဆောဆုံးပါပဲတဲ့ကွာအဲ့ဒါဆိုစီတောင်းတူမျိုးနိုင်ပါချေဒီနေ့ဖာချိုရဲ့ဒီနေ့ဒီတောင်းတူမျိုးငါပဲထုံးတယ်ကဲတော့မဟုတ်ဘူးကွာဖာချိုကသူ့သူ့ထုံးချေတာမဟုတ်ဘူးအင်းကြီးကအမျိုးပေါ်တော့တယ်ဒီကြီးမှသူမဟာချင်းနဲ့ရခေါ်လာအဲ့ဒါအမျိုးပါချစ်သူလာကြပါရှော့ဒီကိုကျင်းရတယ်ကောင်းပါဘူး။ကျန်တဲ့ဒီနေ့ခေါ်လို့ဒီပြန်ထားတော့တယ်မထားရဲ။ကျန်တဲ့ဒီကြီးငါတို့ချက်သေးတဲ့လောင်းနဲ့မရှိလို့ဒီလိုပါရှော့မီရှန်နဲ့မိုက်ကိုစုပါတယ်။ကာမချင်ပါတယ်။ကျန်တဲ့ချက်ချမနဲ့ဒီကြီးရဲ့နံပါတ်စာချက်အဲ့ဒီကျော်ချမနဲ့မှာဖွင့်ကြည့်ရင်ဒီမှာပေါက်ပြီးရောဝိုင်းတားရဲစား။ကျန်တဲ့ဓာတ်ဝင်နေကြည့်ရဲစား။ဒါတဲ့ဓာတ်ဝင်နေကြည့်ရင်တော့အဲ့ဒါကလည်းမဲပါစိုးပါတယ်။တမဲပါစိုးတော့လို့ရှိတယ်။
So let's then progress towards you looking at how to overcome these afflictive minds. But just before we get to that, let's just recap, because it's important we understand what and why we need to abandon. So we've spoken about how anger, for example, the afflictive minds, for example, anger, are our true enemy. So let's look at the rise of anger. So let's say we're walking along and we're approaching someone, we see someone before us, and this is someone we don't like. So immediately we've seen the object, there's the object, then we have an eye sense power that encounters the object, and then the exaggeration comes along that says, now this is a state of danger, and we have this feeling of dislike and therefore apprehension. So we have all these variety of minds coming along. And so this has just arisen independent from seeing this person. And maybe they're thinking the same thing, and their facial expression is showing that they perceive us in a similar manner. So this, of course, then we're reacting in our own way. So we have our own mental story going on, and we have these minds of apprehension and maybe fear arising within us. Then we meet the person, and they express how they're feeling. They speak to us in a harsh manner, in an abusive manner. Now we hear this, we have the object of sound, it meets the ear sense power, and then there's the exaggeration and all the other afflictive minds engaging like we heard before. And so now we've met an object, an object of sound that we dislike, that we don't want to meet, an unwanted object. So now we have minds of anger arising within us. And now we have the mind of anger present and a number of other minds. So these minds of anger are disturbing our peace, or destroying our inner peace. Not the person before us, not the sound that we have heard, but our reaction to it. And that's why this mind of anger is called our enemy, because this enemy has destroyed our inner peace. Secondly, now we're accumulating negative karma because we have negative minds present. And this negative karma will lead to a ripening result in future lives. And therefore we will suffer in the future because of this mind of anger. Not because of the sound or the words the person said or their facial expression, but because of our minds, our reaction to this. And likewise, then, if we respond, then under the influence of these minds of anger and resentment, etc., we will respond in an unskillful way, probably in a harsh way. And therefore, we'll accumulate further negative karma that will lead to further suffering in our future lives, will strengthen our unhappiness in the present moment, and of course, bring unhappiness to the person we're encountering then and there, and maybe others later as well. So it's for these reasons that our enemy is not the person in front of us. Our problem is not what they said to us or how they said to us, how they said it to us, or the expression they showed to us. It is our own minds. Our own minds are our enemy. It's these that cause us suffering now and in the future, as well as harm to others. So that's what we've just said now is a repeat of what we've said already tonight, but it's important we have this very clear. So now let's talk about how we can overcome these real enemies, our true enemies.
Mm.
So staying with this one illustration, so now we go into a bit of investigation. So we are aware of the mind's presence. So we are aware now we're upset. So now we're investigating, we're upset. So why are we upset? So we're aware of the causes, were the person's expression, as well as what they said and how they said it. So at this point, the usual way that we respond, and certainly almost everyone responds, is we then respond in a similar manner, and we feel justified in doing so. The person looked at me in a certain way, said something in a certain way, and maybe quite clearly in a negative way, and we respond in a similar way, and we feel justified in doing so. However, let's try a different tact. So we continue with our investigation. And so now we know that this person has got maybe the bulging red eyes and the red face and the harsh tone. So we know that we've heard this, we've seen it, but why did they speak to us in that way? So why did they have such an expression? That didn't come without any relationship to their own mind. Their own mind in that very moment was angry. So because they were upset, they were frustrated, they were angry, they displayed this expression, and they spoke in a particular way. So therefore, due to the anger in their mind, they related to us in this unskillful manner. So therefore, as far as that person is concerned, the actual problem is not the expression, it's not the words, it's rather it came from something, it came from their mind, and in this case, the mind of anger. So to illustrate this very clearly, there's a famous example. So if someone throws a stone at us and it hits us, and we will feel some pain, but what we don't do is look at the stone with anger and beat the stone. We don't have any anger towards the stone. We rather look at that person who threw the stone at us, and we get angry with them. So we don't get angry with the stone. We don't blame the stone. We rather Balaam who threw the stone. So similarly, this, the harsh words that hurt us and the stone that hurt us, these two can be likened. And then similarly, the motivating anger behind the harsh words and the person who threw the stone, they can be likened. So in the same way that we don't get angry with the stone, we should not get angry at real harsh words or the expression. This is not the cause of what's going on. There was something behind it. And in the case of the person who speaks to us inappropriately, it's their mind of anger. And with the person who threw it at us, of course, if you go one step further back, it's the mind of anger. That is the source of their behavior, the source of their speech, of their activity, of their expression, the mind of anger. So if you're going to get angry with something, get angry with their mind of anger. Now to understand this even deeper, we can utilize some other analogies. So, because the one thing that we haven't yet discussed about the situation of this person before us who's angry and expresses anger to us, is that they didn't intentionally generate the mind of anger. They didn't decide when they're going to get angry in that moment. They acted without freedom. The anger just arose within them and they expressed it. They had no freedom. So we can understand this through an analogy of if we meet someone who's got who's ill and maybe they've got a terrible skin disease and they've got wounds on their skin and maybe on their face, and you can see very clearly that this person is suffering tremendously. Immediately within us, naturally within us, compassion will arise for this person who's clearly suffering. So this illness, this skin disease that they are now suffering under, this wasn't something they intentionally contracted. Rather, it's something that just happened to them. They didn't intentionally bring it about. And therefore, we just naturally give rise to it, to compassion for them. So similarly, with this person who's acting towards us in an abusive manner, they didn't intentionally generate the mind of anger and decided that they're going to talk to us in that way. Rather, they too are acting without any control or freedom, in the same way that the ill person didn't have any control or freedom about becoming ill. So in the same way as with the sick person, compassion arose within us, we too should have compassion for this angry person who's angry not by their own wish, but in an uncontrolled manner without any freedom. Then how how to respond. So here, we've now seen one important point, that this person is suffering under their afflictions, is not intentionally doing so. They're doing so without freedom. So therefore, they are speaking to us in this harsh manner without any freedom. So therefore, we shouldn't be angry with them, because they are acting in this way without any control. So how to respond? So in the same way that if you have cold water and you add more cold water, the water is just going to stay cold. But if you want to have something that's drinkable, you know you need to add some boiling water to the cold water, and then it will become drinkable. So similarly, if someone is angry and we respond with the same, with anger, we know what happens. The situation just gets worse. Rather, we need to respond with a contrary mind. So in the same way, if you have a cold and you need to bring heat together, and then it will become something more pleasant. So similarly, if someone is angry, responding with anger will just make it worse. So rather, one needs a contrary mind. And so here, one needs to respond with minds of love and compassion. So if we are able to generate these minds of love and compassion despite the difficult situation we're in, then these minds will serve to pacify the anger of the being before us. So this may sound a little strange. How do these minds of love and compassion in my continuum impact the mind of anger in the continuum of the being before me? When we were very little children, and we were cold, then our mother would hold us close, and the heat from her body would envelop us and warm us. So in a similar manner, if there's someone before us whose mind is out of control with anger and they're enraged, if we generate minds of love and compassion, these minds will have a positive impact on them and will serve to pacify their very afflicted and disturbed minds. And the reason that our minds of love and compassion can impact on the continuum of someone else is because, despite them being enraged at the time and their mind consumed by anger, they still, on their continuum, have the potency of love and compassion. And therefore, if we have love and compassion manifest within our own minds, this will have an impact on the love and compassion which exists already on their continuum, and thereby will be able to slowly pacify their minds, calm their minds. So this is how the the amount of love and compassion on our own continuum can impact on the continuum of another. And moreover, the stronger the mind of love and compassion at that time in our own continuum, the stronger it's manifested within us, the greater the impact it will have on the other person, the more power it will have, and therefore to activate the potencies within the continuum of the other being. So again, if we give rise to the mind of love and compassion in this trying, difficult situation, of course our mind is going to stay calm and gentle and peaceful, and we will slowly have an impact on the mind of the person before us. Their mind will start to calm down. And it may not happen in that moment, but because of your more skilled response, then as you encounter this person more often and you remain someone who's clearly gentle, someone who's peaceful, and someone who's calm and dependable, then your relationship with this adversary is going to change. And you'll no longer have a harsh relationship, an adversarial relationship. You'll rather develop actually a friendship, and a friendship of perhaps even of a quality where you can laugh about how things used to be in the past. And this will come about through your own training and cultivation of the minds of love and compassion, and your own inner disposition that is peaceful and gentle and relaxed. Because this has an impact on the other person. You stay calm and gentle and skillful in this difficult situation, they become happier and calmer, and they therefore will have a better impact on others later in the day than the way they spoke to you now. So these are the kinds of temporary benefits and temporary happiness that comes from cultivation, love and compassion. But of course, from powerful minds such as these, virtue, powerful virtue is accumulated. And this ensures that in our future lives, we will have good conditions, we'll meet the Dharma, we'll engage well with the Dharma, etc. In other words, very powerful, beneficial results come from the practices of love and compassion. And then this means through having good conditions in future lives, our spiritual progression will continue, our spiritual development will continue, and we will thereby progress towards the attainment of our own spiritual goals, such as calm abiding, bodhicitta, liberation, and enlightenment itself. So this whole stream of progression is powered by minds such as love and compassion. The person then who is engaging in cultivating these positive minds, these virtuous minds, and thereby weakening the afflictive mind, this is the kind of person that the wise, the skilled, refer to as someone who is truly brave. So what have we looked at tonight? So tonight, one of the key points that we looked at is to remind ourselves again that our true enemy, the true cause of all our harm and suffering for ourselves and for others, are our own afflictive minds. This is from this that all the problems and difficulties that we experience follows. And we then heard tonight about how we the process of the generation of the afflictions works. How through these six doors of the sense faculties, we meet an object, and then the various kind of conceptual consciousnesses arise, including the various afflictive minds. So we spoke about that in some detail tonight. And therefore, we've now understood how the process works, and we've come to identify clearly that it's these afflictive minds that cause us all our pain and suffering, as well as the pain and suffering for others. So it's these that need to be abandoned. So how to abandon them? So we spoke now at the end about the need to cultivate the opposite minds, the virtuous minds, positive minds. And the more we cultivate these, the stronger our virtuous minds get, the weaker the contrary minds get, the afflictive minds. So we need to, in our daily meditation, we generate the commitment that we won't harm others through any activity of our three doors. We'll guard our mind and thereby guard our speech and guard our behavior. And making this commitment, we're making the commitment to watch our mind and to guard our mind. And this commitment we need to do repeatedly every single day. This is important because to doing it repeatedly over a period of time, change will come. And then tonight we also spoke about how to respond when we encounter difficult situations, or in particular people who are upset with us, who are angry towards us. To remind ourselves that they are not our enemy. The words they are saying are not the cause of our suffering. This person before us, this person who too, just like me, doesn't want to suffer at all, now due to having no freedom, they are suffering, and therefore they are acting this way and they are accumulating the causes for further suffering. Knowing that they suffer, I don't want to suffer like them, so therefore I must guard my mind. I must take responsibility for my own response. I must ensure that I respond in a skillful way, in a patient way, in a loving way. And in this way, we can be of benefit to them and we can be of benefit to ourselves.
That's only if you should
Then in Kachi Suna to get again? Yeah, good. And so we'll then tomorrow we'll then continue to look at these destructive emotions, these afflictive minds, and in particular this mind of attachment. So tomorrow we'll talk about how this mind arises and how to abandon it. So we'll look at the antidotes as well to this mind of attachment. So it's a little after 8:30, but if you have questions, feel free to ask. If you need to leave, please feel free to leave. Some questions for tonight? Okay, then tomorrow. Thank you very much.
Oh,